if I could think of a way to describe like the best weed, it was just like that gooey, like sticky, like
the actual drip of the plant.
Yeah, that was like my like.
Discipline stoners. What's your discipline? You a stoner? That's cool. So are we.
I'm high a lot. It's weird to finally say that with pride. I'm high a lot.
This plant just helped me chill out. Found focus. Found confidence. All of a sudden I was productive. Less protective. More progressive. Yeah, we talk about stuff like I'm a next sommelier. But this is about a medicine, baby. We wish everyone a mindful life. It's been a helpful tool for us. Whatever the route to peace, it's each individual's journey. And the more we communicate, maybe we can all help each other out. Love and light. Welcome to Discipline Stoners Podcast with your host, 11.
And my name is Winnie.
And we are the gateway drug to mindfulness.
Welcome back to another episode of Discipline Stoners. I'm your host, 11.
My name is Winnie.
And we are the gateway drug to mindfulness. And today, oh my God, this is the heat. This, imagine if you had an interview with LeBron in college. This is the heat. Okay, let me tell you, when you wrote this.
No, I didn't.
Our next guest, okay, is Josh Rutledge, founder of The Drip, Lush Cannabis, Slurpees, Legacy Crops. Josh is a multi-award-winning legacy cultivator with deep roots in cultivation leading back to the late 90s. A genuine love for the cannabis plant has inspired Josh to build multiple businesses and brands in the cannabis space. From retail to flower brands to consulting, Josh is on a journey to share his work on the global stage.
Hey! All right, welcome all right.
Get your joints up for my man, Josh.
Well, thank you for that.
Blessings. Thank you for that.
Coming on.
No, but for real, for a minute, it is, dude, what you create is amazing.
Well, thank you, man.
Yeah, we're just like a little bit.
I'm so happy to have you on.
And it is fan. We're fan we're girls fans and boys.
For sure. We want to highlight and cover not only people that kind of put their whole neck on the line and proceed with their life, with their dream and their vision, but someone who you can just tell cares. There's no replacing care. This is making good music. This is putting everything into it. We're so excited to figure out how you do this and how your life works. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, bro. Appreciate you guys having me, man.
Love, man.
It's just a work of passion, you know? Like, the results always are going to speak on the amount of work that goes in, right? And it's a lot easier to put the work in if you just truly enjoy what you do and wake up every day and, like, it's not, you know, it's never like, I have to do this or I have to do that. It's like, sweet, I get to go to the greenhouse today and see what the new genetics look like. I get to go, you know, to the flower room that's coming down next week and see what's popping in there, you know? Like, so it's...
Have you always been like that? Because I have a friend who... this is kind of getting heavy really quickly, but I have a friend who lost his wife to cancer. And he, after that happened, he started changing his wording from I have to for everything to I get to. And so when you were just saying that, like, I get to do this, like, have you always... had that mindset?
Gratitude, bro.
No, but yeah, you're right. You know, it's coming from a place of gratitude. I kind of figure that out. I don't know when in my life I figured that out, but, you know, coming from a place of gratitude will always bring happiness. Mm-hmm. And I got a 13-year-old daughter. That's, you got to think, a 13-year-old girl in today's world, you know, like, they need some guidance probably on, you know, what it means to be happy and what it means, you know, to kind of get through what they go through as a kid in today's social media world, right? And it's like, the biggest advice I give her is that, you know, the end of the day, if you can find ways to be happy and be grateful for the things that, you know, you have in your life, doesn't matter what else is going on, right? You know, like, you could look at it from two points of view, and one of them is going to make you happy and one of them is going to make you unhappy. So take your pick. It's up to you. You know what I mean? Like, no one else can do it for you.
So simple.
Yeah. So, and that's
learning that at a young
literally
age
what it is, right?
Is,
yeah,
that's so invaluable, I think. Like, yeah. Like if you can carry that with you throughout your young adulthood, like, you're on a good trajectory.
I think that you are the calmest person of a 13-year-old girl I've ever met. I feel like if I was a dad, my girl's 13, I'd be like, on edge all the time. Yeah. But no,
she's a good kid. She's a good kid. So, you know what? She's...
That's beautiful.
Yeah, she does... She helps around the house. You know.
You gotta try this.
I will try all of this.
You got the frosted gas cake?
We got the frosted gas cake.
So what, you rolled the frosted
gas
cake?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, so yeah. I'm rolling the...
You got the cartel candy.
Oh my gosh.
Which I also love because you gave me a little... not a little nug. It was actually quite big. Okay. That kind. No, yeah, I know. This conversation can go
so many different directions like,
and we're just a bit excited right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you obviously go ahead.
I do. I want to know your like first moments with weed. Like when.
Oh, okay. So first moments with weed. It started. I was 12 years old.
Oh, okay.
There's this giant fucking massive music festival close to where I live. I grew up around stock cars, race go karts, all this stuff. So, hey. So.
Oh my
you like.
God! It's crazy. Bro. It's perfect. Like we will get into this. Like we got to update, but please keep going.
So they had this giant concert festival called Eden Fest, and it was like a one off because everybody burnt the place down. Like the promoter left with the money. Like all kinds of crazy stuff happened, but it was like I think it was like 200,000 people at this event. Like it was bananas, right? And if you lived within a certain radius of the track and where the event was, you got free tickets.
Oh, right? Sick.
So obviously, like, you know, all this, the homies at 12, right? I guess that's what we were. I don't know if we were homies at 12, but the homies at 12, yep. Right? We're like running around this festival and our parents are there somewhere, but like we're in a crowd of 200,000 people. We're body surfing. We're like doing all the things you shouldn't do when you're 12, right?
Fuck yeah.
So that was the first experience to smoke weed that day for the first time. And to be quite honest with you, I don't really remember. I think I was so stimulated with the whole like, you know, so it's hard to say like whether like it was the cannabis or like the energy or like the first time being 12 in a massive music festival with no like one looking over your shoulder, seeing what you're up to, like, you know, so it was like, I don't know, but like it was a good experience. You know, it was definitely a good experience. And then after that, I didn't smoke for quite a while. I don't think like it was kind of just one of those like in the moment, like we're here, we're doing this, you know, like,
yes,
let's take it to the next level and smoke some pot, you know, like, right. So
you had a romantic experience.
Yes. 100%.
So that's like that definitely plays a part, I think, into the emotional compartmentalizing of the substance.
Yeah.
But you said you didn't smoke for then a few years.
Yeah, I don't remember after that really smoking much. Like after that, like I had a lot going on in my life. I was playing like high level hockey.
You were.
Yeah, yeah. So before I got in the, I'll tell you guys this backstory after. But before I got in the cannabis space,
discipline.
I did. Yeah, I was a sports training coach. So there was a few years where like I don't remember really smoking much after that, and then it was like the high school, obviously high school years. Once you get to high school, then it's kind of just like you know,
high school.
That's
for
it.
A reason.
That's it. Everything goes out the window. And then like I think like it was like I was probably 14 when I started like occasionally smoking again. You know, like me, my best friend, who's actually like my right hand guy in the garden now, still to this day, we've been best friends since we're like 5 or 6, right?
Let's go.
Yeah. So there's also a cool backstory to that too of the whole growing side of things, but. We would go, there's this park up the road, and we made this stupid bong called Bong Holio.
Golden Holio.
Yeah.
Do you have
shout out B&B?
And it wasn't a bong, it was like the green, you know, remember the big green alien Slurpee containers you get from like Max? I don't know, it was probably Becker's then.
Yes.
Right? So it was like this big giant green plastic
Holy
alien.
Shit.
And then we didn't know it wasn't a bong. Like we made a pipe actually, but we thought it was a bong at the time,
the
right?
The thing where the straw came up.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah. So
totally.
So we melted a bowl in there. And so we would go to the park, right? There's me, my best friend who lived across the road, and then like our other like homie that would live like, you know, a couple roads over. We'd meet there at the park and just go get blasted.
Yeah.
And just smoke, and then the one guy would always like bug out and be like, eat the ashes, and he'd just be like, guys,
eat
the ashes or the bullet. And I didn't know that was a bad idea then.
Oh my god,
I was like,
I didn't know that was a thing ever.
Yeah, so like, I don't know, I never tried it, and I was like, that's gross, dude. But
It's not.
He would do it. He would do it.
Okay.
So he would eat the ashes and like, and then he's like, nice guy. And I'm like, I don't know. That was like my first, like, first part of my life where I was like, genuinely enjoy just getting blasted out of my fucking mind.
Yeah.
You know, like,
bong hits as a
it's sitting in the dark in this park and like seeing like a light from a light tower way off and away from like, you know, a radio tower and be like, oh, I wonder how long it would take to walk there, you know?
Yes.
Like, wait, do you want to try? You know, we never tried, but it was always like, oh, I wonder what's over there.
A simple dimension. Yeah. You're like welcoming your brain into, you know, operating with like a really focused pace. Cannabis takes you to like a new place in your cognitive experience here as a human. That's around the age, right? Like you're becoming an individual kind of like as a teenager and you start to like see the world differently. It's a common answer for people who have fallen deeply to contribute so well to the cannabis culture and industry.
It's usually like, it starts early.
Yeah, right around the teens. I tried weed for the first time around 12 and same, didn't fuck with it like for a while. And then we fell in love with it when we were like 20, 21. Yeah. But did you accept being a stoner?
I mean, yeah, I think I embodied the whole.
You didn't neglect it. You're like,
like, because our house ended up being the spot, right?
Your mom was cool.
My mom smoked too, right?
Yes! So,
shout out, mom.
So really, that's where, like, you know, like, that's where, like, probably the basis of, like, the whole cultivation side of things started was because mom was fucking dope. And
yes!
We actually went to jail together, like.
You and mom?
Yeah, dude.
We got
popped when I was 18. I was cultivating in the house. And it was nothing major, bro. It was, like, a little closet, but, like. Some things went down, and then we had someone staying with us that, like, told me he was on his own reconnaissance. If he shows up for his court date, he's fine, right? I'm giving the guy a roof to sleep under for a bit, and then they show up looking for him, and then one thing led to... So me and mom went to jail, like, 3 days before Christmas together.
Oh, my God, Christmas! How long were you guys in?
I think we got bail the next day or something, so we didn't spend the holidays in there or nothing, but like
with mom for
dude, and I'd never been in trouble before, right? Like I was smoking and like moving packs and stuff, but I never gotten shit for anything, so that was my first experience, and it was like fucking 20 squad cars in like K-9 unit and all this shit raid in your house. And I'm like,
that's traumatizing.
Fuck, man.
What year was that? Was that the 90s or the
2000s? No, it would have been 2001 or 2, I think.
That's pretty gangster, yo.
Yeah.
But also, like, you're just being real about it. You're like, I just enjoy cannabis. Like, I'm moving this flower, I'm embracing this flower and growing this plant. It really shouldn't be illegal. But that's funny that you were doing a kind thing, helping out a criminal associate. And, I've definitely had many of them too. I know about having to keep that distance.
Yeah.
Oh man,
that sucks. I learned my lesson, but
yeah.
Were you allowed to stay together in jail?
You know what?
You and mom?
We were separate, like in the jail, and then like I think when we went to go do the bail hearings, we were like in the next cell to each other. But like for the night that we spent there, we were like separate. Yeah, I was beside this like
I hate that.
Yeah, it sucked. Like, what? I just felt guilty as shit. I'm like, fuck, I got my mom in jail, eh? Like, what the fuck? Bro,
how did I get
my mom in jail? Shit, you know?
Like, usually you're scared because you're going to get out of jail and your mom's going to get in jail.
Yeah.
You're like, I brought her with me.
Yeah. I was like, fuck, what the fuck is going on right now?
Hard shout out, mom.
Hard shout out, mom.
So, wow. So, to this day.
That's true. That's mom, deep.
Mom still helps. All our pheno hunting, our first rounds of our pheno hunts, are done in a greenhouse with automated light depth and automated irrigation in mom's backyard.
Oh!
Fuck yeah.
The truth comes out. Mom's really the mastermind.
We need to get her on the podcast.
Thank you for sharing that. It makes a lot of sense that you have this maternal connection and love. This is a female plant, no? This is a mom. We are celebrating moms. Bless that. Bless that energy. Yeah. That's why it's so dense and full of like vibrating, joyful love. That's what it feels like. What is Oh fuck, I want to get into the technics, but sorry, this story is amazing.
I know
you are a fucking superhero of weed.
Yeah, we could go so many places. My brain wanted to
share the joint.
Share the joint, and talk to you about like what your favorite cultivars are and what your experience not experience, but like how you pheno hunt.
Process.
Okay. Yeah,
what your process is, just because of what
that's where
you're
I was
coming
going
up
to.
With.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Also, another thing I may mention about your weed, which is like might be like too deep for some consumers, but I pay a lot of attention to the stems, like what's going on with this, how attached the weed is to it. It's like every bud of yours has this beautiful little song of like being, it's fresh and like dense and connected enough and crystallized enough that it wants to stay on the root, but it seems so flush so well that there's like a healthy amount of life still in the stem, but like it's like willing to part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in that, honestly, that's like what we shoot for. We want that dry process to be slow enough that plant can kind of keep its integrity, right? And then the perfect moisture level for us is like when I have to work to break it, but when I break it, it makes the snap noise.
Oh,
that's it.
Like,
you know what I mean? Like, if it doesn't make the snap noise, it's not dry enough yet. And if I don't have to work to break it, then it's too dry.
Oh, cool. Right?
That
I've never heard it like that.
Because this has been, I mean, listen, I could go on forever how your weed is like walking through Holt Renfrew. Like, it stimulates my senses and takes me places, and you can tell that there's like such care with it.
It literally could be fragrance.
But like... But the techniques and the fun, because I often don't experience weed that gets both the function and the smell, because we've gotten some really great opportunities to receive some super cool buds, and either it looks great, it smells great, and you break it up and it burns black. What the fuck? Or it this fucking stem is all... It won't
too wet
break
still.
And shit.
Too wet still.
Yeah. And I'm like, so, and I find that as a mixer, as a music producer, it's hard to mix too. It's basically like your mixing process, because the seeds are done, the strain is decided, your lights and everything, but it's like a patience thing. Like, and it's like you get it just to the right point where it knocks, but it doesn't like scrape your ears and like
dry for 21 days.
That's 3 weeks.
That's the secret.
That's the money.
So everybody knows. Dry your weed for 3 weeks. Just make sure your parameters are good. And no, I won't tell you the parameters that we dry at.
Fair enough, bro. You got to keep some sauce. I'm not telling my compressor.
No, that's
do
it.
Do
that's
the
it.
Work.
You're right. Be patient. You know what I mean? give it the time to get to where it needs to be. And a lot of people like ask if we cure. We don't cure. I do no curing process. It all happens in that 21 days. If your environment is dialed in your dry room, the cure process happens while it's drying.
Can I ask a question? I don't actually know what... it means to cure.
So basically, when most people talk about curing, it's some kind of like jarring, or they put it in some kind of like bucket, or I know some of the bigger scale guys do it in 55 gallon drums. And then basically like every day they'll burp it. So they'll like a gas exchange happen every day, let in a fresh amount of oxygen. In the jar, right? Most people just every day you burp it, right? There's some products in the market now. I don't really know how well they work, but that claim that you can just leave them in there and it's kind of like self-burping. So we store in those. I don't know if most of our stuff doesn't store very long, obviously.
Remember when we went on the Simply
yes,
Bear
do,
facility
yeah.
and the green
That's
boxes?
All clicking. Yeah, so when you burp it and there's an exchange of gas, what does that do to the product?
To be quite honest with you, I haven't really educated myself completely deeply in the process of curing, just because I was always on the mentality if you grow it right and you dry it right, you don't need to put it in a jar for 6 months. You know what I mean? That was my thing. I was like, I don't know. My weed smokes really good after I dig it off the stem. So I don't, you know, like, but yeah, it's
don't solve
it's,
a problem you don't have.
It's some kind. And I know like terpene profile will change as well over time. You go from like having distinct terpenes, like separated terpenes, to kind of have more of like a blended kind of all around profile. When you cure for a long time in a jar, it'll definitely change the profile a little bit, but
like as opposed to you being able to read the lemony notes and then the gas, the longer you leave it, it will just smell like a lemon
it
gas.
It gets its own kind of like blended kind of profile that comes together as one, which some people like.
It's like sauce too. When you make a sauce, you're like, oh, there's like the onion sitting on the tomatoes. But if you leave it for
it's
like
ready,
a minute
it long
or two,
enough.
You're like, oh, it's all fucking
yeah. That's warm. It. And then it just becomes its own flavor, its own one thing, right? So I think that's... the premise behind the cure process, but to me it's more just, you know, as long as you dry properly, you don't have issues with chlorophyll being trapped in the flower, and then
can you talk about that, because it tastes green sometimes.
Yeah,
it
so like if for anybody that dries their flower too quickly, the, because if you harvest your plant still healthy, which we try to do, you know, it's still producing chlorophyll right until the day you cut it, the minute you cut it, right? So it's not like when you cut it, that just disappears, right? So the plant has to use up that chlorophyll that's stored, yeah. right?
It, oh, it has to use it. It has to use it. It's a sugar in the body.
It has to process it, right? Yes. It has to actually use the chlorophyll up, or else you'll get that, like, I kind of get it like, it's kind of like a hay kind of.
It's like grass. It's like green.
Yeah,
like, and it's like a tree. Like
yeah. So that's usually where that comes from. Is just, you know, too quick of a dry. The chlorophyll gets trapped, and then once it's trapped, that's when I think the curing process really helps. Mm. Is you'll get rid of that over time. Mm. But yeah, we just make sure that we don't do that, and then we don't have to worry about it.
It very much is like dealing with a woman. You gotta be patient. Can't rush it.
Or at least with me specifically.
the woman I've experienced.
That's beautiful. But yeah, that's thank you for that. So yeah, let's talk about your pheno hunts.
Sorry to cut you off, but you can tell he's a master because he talks about it simply. I do a lot of writing and reading in like the mindful awareness, law of attraction, manifestation space.
Yep.
And like there's a saying of like, you're not a master until you can explain something simply.
That's true, yeah, because you're just like, it's a feel instead of like I read it in a book and trying to regurgitate it.
My guy.
Yeah,
it's like a feel.
Yeah, you just can, yeah. It's easy to express it.
We're all about feelings
when
here.
When you feel it, then when you...
Expression.
Like, yeah.
That's it. So you literally do feel guided by a process or a larger vision, like you're an instrument rather than just like trying to make. Like you're like making, forcing. You're like, oh, I'm part of this process. I'm going to...
I never really looked at it that way, but
harmonizing with nature.
I guess, like in a way, because like you're, all the decisions you make in a grow room, you know, through the process is like, for us, a lot of it's data based, right? We use a lot of data tracking to make our decisions. But at the end of the day, that's the science aspect of it. But at the end of the day, there's an art to understanding like how to manipulate things, right?
They're just points of frequency.
That's right. For you to get some kind of gauge on what's happening. It's up to you to decide what you want to happen.
Yes.
Right? Like,
so you break through the data. Like when I'm mixing a song, I know that your vocals right now that you're talking in like 1K area of frequency. And I'm speaking maybe like 1.5 and you're speaking 2.5. And it's like, if I want to pull yours down, if I want to hear less of her, if it's too loud, I can pull that frequency down. And you're right. So I'm looking through it into a vision of what needs to happen, but you're utilizing data.
Yeah, you need the data to make the decisions, but then it's up to you. Like it's up to you to being good at your craft to like get that result from the data. Yeah, I think it's a mix of like science and you have to understand the plant. You have to understand the processes that happen in a plant, right? But at the same time, like you need to be creative. Yeah. You need to be creative in how you get to your end process, right? Like early on cultivating for me, it was just like, how can we get to the end of the run without fucking it up? You know what I mean? Like without having issues, right? And then as you like learn and you get better and you take some time, right? And then eventually it becomes like, okay, like I can confidently get to the end of a run clean, no issues, no pests, no.
How long did that take? That part?
Oh, I don't know, dude. Long time.
Yeah.
Long
so time, dude. You gotta suck, man.
Oh yeah, dude. No,
you gotta suck for a while,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not, you know, it's not something you just like.
Why did you care to get through that part?
Because I love to grow weed, I guess. I don't know.
You love it.
And I'm the type of person that like I thoroughly enjoy problem solving.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Like that excites me. Like doesn't
efficiency, bro.
Doesn't have to be like it could be in anything, right? I just enjoy like the process of like coming up with a solution to a problem and then like executing it and then getting the satisfaction of like, fuck yeah, that worked. You know, like so.
One of the most beautiful things in the world.
Yeah,
one of the
like,
best feelings.
To me, like I thoroughly enjoy that, and I feel like cultivation is that like over and over and over and over and over. You know, like you get through a run, and then guess what? There's another one. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you did a good one and then you quit. Like, you did a good one, and then it's like, okay, what can I do differently now to make that one better, you know?
It's evergreen.
Yeah.
That's what makes it so beautiful and, like, that you will continue to learn. Like, my best case scenario is in 5 years, I look at my shit now and I'm like, that's whack. Like, but I think right now what I'm putting out is fire. Like,
yeah, you're just 100%.
Like, you better. Oh, that's brave, bro. It's brave.
That's I think it's the process of being good at anything though, right? You know, like fail enough times that you learn enough lessons that you become good. You know? Yeah.
Now, Winnie, I know you're going to get into strains, right? You're going to ask some strains. I think like that conversation really lends itself really well to that because of the strain choices you choose and you create like some shit I've never heard of. And I like to consider myself a bit of a geek, but like you, you gave us something that we've talked about on the podcast since, where it's the only time we've, I call it heard, obviously, you know, where I'm synesthetically connected, but we've smelled earthy and like sweet, like cotton candy
chunky
in a donkey hay, like in the best way. Like I'm talking about the most richest earth, like
super earthy profile, like a traditional Kush kind of profile. Yeah,
and then right next to the county fair cotton candy stand. Like, don't understand. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I know I went on a bit of a rip there. I know you're gonna ask about strains, but I wanted to leave you off there because
we can just go from there in terms of like how you're creating and. If you'd like to share your process.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't breed anything for resale, right? So there's a big difference between like our processes and someone that's breeding for the purpose of selling a genetic or seed stock, right? Because like
you're an artist dropping hits, not a songwriter writing songs.
That's right. Like I'm simply looking for fucking unicorns. Like that's all. My only end goal is to find something that's fucking crazy. So if that means that like 3/4 of the seed stock herm. And they show intersex traits and they're not viable for commercial production, I don't really care.
Oh,
because I only need one. You know what I mean? I only need to hit that one home run.
He's not even stressed out. He's not even stressed out about it.
Like, that's it's not ideal, right? But like,
Fuck them.
But like, so saying that, like for someone that sells their seed stock and sells their genetics, like I feel like they have a moral obligation to their consumer. To make sure that it's tested well and that you're not going to, you know, because a lot of people don't grow commercially at scale. They're home growers and they rely on that for their meds and they want, you know, like they're expecting that to get a certain result, right? Mm. And if the whole tent, you know, they say they have a grow tent at home for their 4 plants and I give them some seed stock and it's not stable and it hermes on them 3/4 of the way through flower, well, that took them, you know, probably 3 months.
Yeah.
Right? To grow that batch of flour. And if it turns out shit for them, well then.
Like, but you have the freedom to
that
just
sucks.
Play.
Yeah, I have the freedom. We're like, I don't care about any of that. So all I do is look for flavor profiles, right? And then go, okay, well, that one's super cool. Like this one's super cool. I wonder what it would be like if we just slap them together and make something new, right? And so like really like it's our processes are not like anything fancy or crazy. It's more just like, hey, like this one's good. I like this one. I really like how that one grows. And let's put them together and find out what happens.
Bro, I can't believe the overlap between us in so many capacities just because, like, the way I produce music is, like, that genre bending. It's like, I don't care. These jazz drums are neat. This gangster-ass southern synth pleases me.
Yeah,
I've not heard them together before. It is a little weird and awkward, but I've established a place where I can take that risk. But if I were producing for someone else, I wouldn't take that risk because I know they couldn't meet that beat with what I can do.
Yeah.
I'll take it from there. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, once this beat is awkward, you're like, oh, nice, I got it. So you can carry it. Yeah, you got the freedom.
It is, like, I agree that it's not fancy or whatever, but it is curation based on all of your experience and knowledge. Yeah,
I think it's more like a time commitment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like to come up with something new, right? Like you can hit it in your first one, but realistically, it's probably going to take you a while. So like that frosted gas cake now, we've done a full breeding run with that one, right? So then there's a bunch of stuff going in the next greenhouse run that's coming up here shortly. That's crosses of that one.
It's crazy.
It's a pretty special profile. The mom of that one is frosted fruitcake, and it came from my good friend Jim at Sacred Cut Seed Co.
Bro, that's the type of mom that would go to jail with you.
Yeah.
That's the most gangster-loving mom you can ever have. Already inside joke.
So the mom's a frosted fruitcake, and that one's won multiple Karma Cup awards. We won one with it. And you know, and they gave me permission to do some work with it, you know, for my own personal collection, not for resale, obviously, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Karma Cup, sir.
So the mom of like the mom for that genetic came from the guys at Sacred Cut, right? So and they just gave me the permission to go ahead, work with it, do what you want to do with it. And I just told them I'm not going to sell. We're not growing, we're making seed, you know, for resale. We're not a seed company, right? We just want it for our own personal collection so that we can look through more stuff, and they're cool with it. So yeah, so we did a lot of work with it, and that's like, you know, like the next kind of generation away from that mom plant,
right? And then and that will be two generations away for this batch, right? So we'll see, you know, if some of the characteristics that we found from the frosted fruitcake come through into the third generation. They do really well in the first. Mm. We'll see if they come through in the second and then in the third, because it's that terpene profile is super unique.
Sorry, just to clarify for some folks about the growing. So when you say generations, are kind of like harvest crops?
No, so from like breeding standpoint. So like we made the first batch of seeds from the frosted fruitcake. We back crossed it to wedding cake. That was one of the results. From 70 seeds, we found that one.
Back cross it, meaning so using like, a strain you already had
so,
a stable.
So a back cross is basically like, so the original cross of frosted fruitcake is wedding cake cross to Fruity Pebble OG. And then you times it again to wedding cake. So you're back. So it's like,
nice.
It's like 70 or 66% wedding cake at this point. Or no, more. 75% wedding cake at this point, right?
Got it. So it's like if your mom's Italian and Greek and your dad's full Italian, you get like 75.
You're an ITAL backcross.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I am, actually.
ITAL BX1.
Okay, I like that.
Bro, that's so sick.
If you ever change your name, that's
ITAL BX11, a.k.a. ITAL BX1.
I want to hear a verse with that in there at some point.
Yes, it's going absolutely.
Shout out to the drip ITAL BX1.
That'll happen immediately.
Oh, like tomorrow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's fucking hilarious.
So good.
Okay, that's so interesting.
So basically, yeah, like the process for us is more just like a time thing, you know, as much as of anything, right? It's like to make the seed stock, right? You're taking up space to make the seed stock. So you make the seed stock, it takes some time, you know, and then you clean up the seed stock. And then, you know, you germinate and run all the seed stock. And it takes, to get to that pheno there was a 2-year process, right? For that frosted gas cakes. From the time that we made the seeds to pop them, right? And then go through 4 rounds of testing and narrowing it down every round to get to like the final keeper. Like it's a long process, right? It's not a hard process. I mean, if you grow weed, it's just growing weed, but like you have to be patient. It's not like you're just going to do it. And like we had an offer recently, for an artist.
Cool. This is so cool.
For an artist that wanted, you know, is thinking about doing their own strain, you know, to take on tour with them, whatever. And have their own, you know, their own flower. It's like their own kind of thing, right?
Super smart.
And they wanted it for the fall.
Oh,
and I was like, okay. So I want to give you guys a little clarity here. Like, we can't even make the seed stock by the fall, you know, like, let alone hunt the seed stock.
Hey,
and then,
Magic Man.
People that don't understand, like it's a process, right? To find something, like, you might get lucky and pop 10 seeds and find something really good, you know. But like, it's, you know, it's a matter of numbers, a numbers game, right? Get through enough gear, you'll find something cool.
So that's the first time where I understand why it's called a pheno hunt.
Yeah, because literally, we fit usually 300 plants in this greenhouse. Which we have a license for, by the way.
Sick. Nice.
FYI.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna
for
ask.
All those watching the show, we do have a license for those 300 plants, so we're good. There's no, you know, we don't get ourselves
off.
We don't get ourselves in trouble around here. So yeah, but like there's 300 plants in there and they're all, you know, brand new. We never seen them before, right? So then it's just like, you know, that
are they clones or
no? So ideally we like to hunt from clone. The greenhouse, what we found, just because we're doing it at such scale, to hold that many clones for that long. It's just a long process. The plant count would be really high. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we just run them right from seed.
Okay.
And then just take, but usually, yes, we run from clone. Usually we do for indoor hunting. Mm-hmm. Lot truer representation of what the like final, you know, product's going to be from clone than from seed.
Okay.
From seed, you're going to get like different growth patterns. You're also going to get different bud structure. The one thing I find that stays pretty consistent, which is good for us, is the terpene profile. From seed to clone doesn't change much.
Doesn't matter. Wow.
So.
Okay, but sorry if this is a little harsh of a turn, but you were saying that like generation to generation, the terpene profile can change significantly?
Yeah. So like this, in that one, the frosted fruitcake profile comes through really good, right? Now, when we make another cross it to something else, the next round, like, if you look at, I can't remember the name of the actual, there's like a graph, funny enough, I did like a project on this in school or something when I was younger and I got in trouble for it. They wouldn't accept it. It was like our, like the major, like, you want to hear something? I don't have my grade 12 because I did my major assignment of the one credit I needed on breeding fucking weed.
Oh my God. So that was basically...
That's some bullshit.
That's you following your path and basically the system saying, we don't understand how to,
I mean, you
got to
think, it's pre-legalization and you're in high school. So, I mean, I can understand why they're not like overly thrilled about you trying to present to the...
They should identify...
You should go back to that high school now and be like, give me my fucking
diploma.
Check
that out, bitch. No, bro, I dropped out of high school too. It fucking doesn't matter. You didn't. But like, I think that teachers should be trained in one thing thoroughly, and that's to identify passion. Like, I was writing. I wasn't doing their assignments, but I'd pass all the tests.
Yeah, that's how I was,
and
too.
And they hated
it. That's how I would write like a 90 on the exam every time, bro, and do no work. Not even bring a book or a pencil to class for a full semester, you know?
I get a quick rundown before we went in for the test. Mainly from my peers.
Yeah.
Like, what did they talk about in chapter one? Thanks. What did they
I would have hated you guys in school.
I know, because we would have just went and chilled and smoked weed.
I would genuinely study before, like, an exam or something. Like, I would put some time in and actually make sure I have the content. But
I was writing. I was just writing rhymes.
Yeah.
Now exactly. I fucking set a world record. Now you're you. Now we fucking got to do that thing. And it's a good thing that we had the confidence to keep going without the affirmation of the structure of the system.
Yep, I agree.
And that's why, honestly, we weren't really destined to be there anyway. So it's not that you don't have your grade 12. It's like you have beyond your grade 12. Like that was you saying, I'm good. Like, I'm going to get off your little skateboard and hop in this Lamborghini.
That's right. I don't need this system. Like, I'm not going to fit into it well anyway. So I should probably just find my own path and figure out a way to, you know, make it through life without joining this club that you guys are all on, you know? Like,
yeah.
So that was kind of...
You had that confidence from a young age.
Yeah.
Did you play sports?
Yeah.
This is helpful in this, or you think so?
100%.
I think 100%. So,
100%. I played hockey, and I was generally like a captain or an assistant captain on every team I played on.
You learn to be assertive. You learn to be helpful when someone needs help. And you learn to get your ass kicked and get up.
That's it. You learn to lose. You learn to win. You know, you learn to, like, pick up the boys when they need some help. You know, you learn to be there for them. It's just...
Yeah.
It's one of those things at a young age that I feel like it teaches you so many life lessons. Yes. To play at a competitive sport, especially a competitive team sport.
Yeah.
You know, just the value of hard work in general, you know, like.
Yeah, and that shit, like, if your boys who, I fucked around with hockey, more like a ball hockey, like on rollerblades. We played at this lacrosse box, so much fun. My dad played a lot of ice hockey.
Yeah.
I played it a couple times, but not too much. But I was a quarterback in football. And that's the thing. I could tell if this tight end was training when we weren't at practice. I call it rehearsal now. Rehearsal practice, as opposed to this one was faster because I knew he was running on the off practice. And oh, you can't even lie. You can't even like, oh, I'm there for you now. It's like, no. Are you working enough on your own time to be good enough to help me?
That's it. Yes. Exactly right. Yeah.
I'm just realizing right now that I have always been, have done very poorly at sports and I had no resilience as a young adult. I had none. That's a very interesting correlation.
Like I think for kids, you know, not all kids are meant to play competitive sports, and that's just the reality of it, right? You know, some people it's just not for them, and
you
they don't want to
do
it, right?
Like that.
But I think for kids, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, but having something that like you're willing to dedicate your time to and work towards, and like commit to a schedule and do all the things that it takes to play a competitive sport.
Yeah.
Right. But it could be whatever. It could be music. It could be anything. Right. Yeah. But to have like the discipline and like to learn at a young age. Exactly. Right. To learn at
you
a young
age. You are the epitome of the epitome of the epitome of a disciplined stoner, bro.
Learn at a young age to, you know, to put the work in. Yes. Right. You know, like
when you hit a shot because you know you practice. Like, I was nice with the wrist shot. Like, I'd win money at the box. Like, older guys would be like, $20, whoever hits a crossbar from halfway.
Yeah.
I'm like, give me the ball.
Yeah.
Top. Which corner? Which corner? Yeah. Like, no problem. Like, wrist shot? Nice. Slap shot? No way.
Yeah.
Slap shot couldn't control it. Like, no way. But I practiced that. I remember practicing that. Like, I practice singing and shit now. Whatever I'm not that good at, I try to practice the most of, right? Yeah. And it's that result. It's that, like, oh, it's a magical thing where you realize, I can focus on this and make, like, some of the great, like, I can be part of a conversation of, like, I don't know. I guess it's self-worth kind of building, isn't it? Because this whole conversation leads back to having the confidence to choose your own path. It's like, I can do something through a medium or through a craft that can put me in a conversation of like great,
yeah,
or
yeah, it's
accomplished or something.
Yeah, it's super cool. And like,
yeah,
I didn't really get into it much earlier, but so my other business, I trained hockey players.
You trained hockey players?
I was a skating coach. I was like a power skating like specialist, right?
Let's go.
So like
core strength.
I always
sorry.
His lovely, once upon a time. But yeah, like I always like, you know, use the example, like it's not by fluke when I see my students that have made the NHL. It's not by fluke. Like I could tell you at an early age, like if anybody had a chance, it was them.
Yeah.
Because they were the first on, the last off, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like when everybody's done, they're coming to ask me an extra question when all the kids are trying to get off the ice. Like they're coming to ask me like, hey, when we were working on this, could you explain that part to me more? You know what I mean? Because they just want it so bad.
They knew how to tune into guidance too.
Yeah.
That's another streak of genius. You can shove your ego aside to be like, can you help me get a little bit better?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, this can make me 1% better to flush my ego down. Yeah. Like, I'll take it. That's weird.
And that's kind of how I address growing too, right? Like, we get, you know, you get high praise, but to me, it's some people I feel like they're just like, oh, this is how I do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the way and this is how I do it. Like, this is how I do it now. That's how I look at it. You know what I mean? But, like, that doesn't mean that this is how I'm, like, I don't think it's the best.
Oh, I hope it's not.
I think it's pretty good. But, like, I'm always, like, trying to find something. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to find something that's going to change it, improve it, like, make the process easier, more efficient, whatever it is. But, like, it's never just like, oh, yeah, we got it.
Wow. You know? Yeah. I
love that.
We talk about that in the risky way of life never being enough. So you have to have that. But always, like, there's always going to be more. Like, some of the most unhappiest people I've ever met were very rich.
Yeah.
So there's always more. So it's like, you got to have that. You have this beautiful balance of wanting more to make it better. You're like leading edge for consciousness. You're pleasing consciousness so much by exploring and trying and adjusting and embracing and expressing. But also you have this peaceful center that maybe isn't so attached to a result. Like, can you talk, like, because seriously, like, always,
no, you nailed it on the head right there. Like, you nailed it on the head.
How though? Like, because I'm working on that. Like, as an individual, as a person, I'm like, I admire that.
I don't know if it's like, you just fucking go through so many struggles in your life that eventually you're just like, this is it. This is fucking my life. You know what I mean? So, like, you never get the reality of like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I might actually win. You know what I mean? You know, like, it's just like, you know, you're just always grinding, you know what I mean?
You just accept
it. Yeah, and you never like really get to the point where it's just like, I feel like there's people that do get to that point and then like, and sometimes they change as people when they get to that point.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? They become different people because like, you know, they get past that like hump and it's like, okay, I made it.
Yeah.
I got through, you know, but in the same sense too, for like you were saying, some of the richest people are not happy.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do once you've achieved all those things? Do you know what I mean? Like what, you know, like what drives you at that point? When you lose your passion, then now what? What are you going to do in life? You know, it's like, so.
That's why they're sad.
So I feel, I feel like after you've won and there's nothing left, it's like, now what?
You got to die.
You know, we had this conversation the other day because like I was talking to a guy and he was talking about, you know, building brands and like he had a friend that, you know, built a good brand and it was got a lot of traction pretty quickly. He got a pretty good offer and he exited.
Oh.
You know, and then I was like, I said to her, I was like, what if like the scenario came up, you know, like say, let's say the end of the year, like we just get the ball rolling and the end of the year, someone makes like an offer for, I don't know, whatever.
$100 million.
No, it wasn't. That's that one.
That's what I think it's worth. I will be representing your next.
That one is a pretty easier answer. But what if it was like a couple million bucks, you know, like 2, 3, right. 4, 5 million bucks, like, right. You know, like.
No,
what makes it worth it? And like, if you asked me like 10 years ago, if someone offered me $5 million for something to walk away, like,
I'm like, are you stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you dumb? But you know what I mean?
You have the sauce and the ability to go do it again yourself.
Yeah, that's part of it too, right? So we talked about it. I was like, well, what are the rules that I can never do it again?
They don't own you in perpetuity.
Just like I have to launch a new brand? If it's just an I love to launch a new brand, then like it's a much easier decision. If it's like you can never do this again.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
You want to play.
Yeah. Like,
you're here to play.
Yeah. Like, I enjoy the game. Like, I thoroughly enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like,
and
I don't.
And because of that, in 5-10 years, you, like, it's not.
100 mil.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
$100 million.
That's not out of the
question.
You know
what? Though, in like 10 years, I don't even know that's really going to be worth that much.
true. I know in Canada, it's going to be
like, I can still eat red meat. You know? Like.
No. That is going to be extreme.
Like I can afford a nice steak
because you know? That's gonna. There's no way that like organic meat isn't going to be like such a high end like equivalent to $500 now.
Yeah,
I think eventually.
Anyway. At some point, I don't know. That's a whole other discussion for another day.
Whole other, yeah.
Yeah, that's overwhelming. Let's get into what is coming on the market for the people,
dude. Oh, okay. Let's brag about this. Okay. Like this is insane.
Okay, so. So the Flavor Club kind of originated from our legacy project with all the pheno hunting that we were working on. And we found like people wanted to try the new things more than the things that we thought were the most fire. Like we figured,
where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Consumer culture.
Yeah. It was like, these are our three that are for sure winners, like for sure keepers winners. And then like, here's this Flavor Club where you can just pick a bunch of random shit. We don't know if it's good or not. And like it outsold the best ones like 10-1. I swear to God. Fuck. I was like, wow.
Cool.
Okay. So the consumer data right there, I was like, okay. So
they'd rather variation and different types because consciousness is still exploring weed in that way.
That's right. You have like a certain amount of like you know, I don't know what
uncertainty.
Amount of uncertainty, you know, to the experience, right? At every experience, you want like a certain amount of certainty,
risk,
and then a certain amount of uncertainty. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like each person, like what makes them happy is a different ratio percentage of those things. Some people, it's like all the way uncertainty and no certainty.
Yeah,
like the like your homie that like travels the world and like hasn't had a steady home for a decade, and you're like, oh, he'll last a year or two, and like now it's like, okay, he's still fucking going,
bro. That's
we're
my
like
dad.
40, eh? Like,
that's my dad. You know,
like, he's still on it, right?
My dad's doing van life. He's in his 60s, happiest he's ever been.
That's what I mean. So like for him, like what makes him happy is like the maximum amount of uncertainty. And the least amount of like repetitive, like I know what's coming, you know?
Yeah.
For other people, it's complete opposite. Like some people in that scenario would just feel awful.
Yeah, like, totally. Their
like,
anxiety.
Mental health would be through like, like on another level. You know what I mean? Like, right? They need that balance or they need more, you know, a little bit of excitement over here, but like mainly like. Yeah.
I feel like I'm like 70-30. Uncertainty to certainty.
Yeah, I'd say I fall in that, probably that same range.
Just because here's what I've entrusted I can control.
Yeah.
Right there in that 30% is my behavior.
Yeah.
So my perception of the outside world, my perception of myself, and my action.
Yeah.
The rest, I don't fucking, I think it'd be pretty boring if I knew.
That's it, right? What are you going to do? Well, that's like, that came back to the whole, like, you know, what do you do when you're done, when you win? It's just like, I don't know now. Like, there's no, you know, you got to do something else to try to win at because I don't ever see myself in a point in my life where I'm like, meh, I'm done.
Yeah,
it would just be so boring.
It's fun here.
It's fun here. Yeah, we're having a good time.
Yeah. With like some not fun moments, but then the argument is we wouldn't know what fun feels like.
Well, that's
like
it, right? Those not fun moments make the fun moment special, right?
Yeah. Do you meditate?
Not like as much as I probably should. I definitely do a little bit of breath work when I kind of find time and motivate myself to really like dedicate some time to it. Yeah,
why are you so calm?
Why am I so calm? Because I'm hot. Because I'm hot.
Yeah!
No, I don't know. Like, I dealt with like massive amounts of anxiety at points in my life to the point where it was crippling, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on medication, all kinds of other stuff. And it was, and I was, dude, the peak of it, I was teaching hockey, bro.
Fuck.
Mm. Yeah, I got to go in the rink. I got 15 students, then I have all the parents, all the fucking coaches, and my staff, and I got to put on a performance for an hour, two, three, 6 hours, and put on this, like, show.
So
like,
intense.
Yeah, I put on this show, like, like I'm the leader and everything's cool, you know, like
emotionally exhausting.
Oh, draining, yeah. Draining. But then like at the same time, I'm like three quarters of the way to a panic attack.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm like, so yeah. So there was a point in my life where I dealt with it a lot. Yeah, I think
did you figure out coping mechanisms? Is that did you just change?
I think I just learned to understand what was happening, right? You know what I mean? And then like, okay, like that's cool, you know, like, and then
just accept it.
Yeah, because when you go through like a point where it's just like so hard that it's like hard to even function in a day, yeah. And then you get to the point where like you've overcome that, then everything else kind of like, oh fuck, well this is easy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that sucked, you know? Like this is like,
that was my context of life when I went through some rough times as a teen and I like tried to return to school and it was like laughable. And then like me and mom were homeless like for a bit. And then it was like, okay, and I'm like, oh, the real life is actually not that bad. Like if you face it like a, assertively, like not like a victim, like if you're like, oh, this is out of my hands, I can't do anything about it, whereas like, oh, instead of going to school, I need to now join real life because like I've seen a harder edge of it. So like having a job at 16 and like contributing to the household is really easy compared to like being sucked into this circumstance that you can't control. Sorry to take a hard L there, but I'm just I deeply resonate with that.
That's the reality of it, right?
Context.
Like, why are you so calm? I don't know, because I've been not.
Yeah.
I've been on the other side, you know? So it's, I don't know.
Yeah, and acceptance can feel like such like a cliche thing now, like with wellness being such a trend.
Yeah.
Just saying like you just got to accept it. It's like, man, it's hard to explain how to do that until you do it. You know, like until you go through it, or it's even hard after
that. Do you think it's because it hurt too much? Like, so you had to find another alternative?
I don't think so. I mean, it was just like,
because there's that theory that humans can't evolve until there's enough pain in a certain circumstance.
Yeah, maybe. Might be. I don't know. Yeah, I guess you get to the point where it's like either you like fight and win or you don't.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You know, right?
Yeah. So, awesome.
Well, like, I know.
You know,
such
like,
a good attitude.
This is the reality of it. You know, you can either succumb or you can like find a way to not and, you know, just battle through, right? So.
Okay.
Let's talk about what's coming on the market.
Oh yeah, shit! We never even got to that. Jesus Christ!
I was just gonna say. I was just gonna say though, like, bro.
Oh, I love it.
Do you have like a package? The bag, or we have one actually over there. I've talked about it, but like.
The little
art.
One.
Yeah, the little guy. Yeah.
So like, I spend time in Los Angeles, and I'm really attracted to the marketing of cannabis partnered with art.
Yeah.
And I, as an artist, obviously try to prioritize art in everything I do. And I've just like...
When those came in, I was so pumped. I was like, look how fire these little things are. You know? I was like, these are sick.
I'm so blown away by how you've just like put that together. And like, yeah, please tell us about like how you know, I don't know.
Is this what we're seeing in the legal market?
No, that one's over there. Grab that
one. Oh, that's still really.
But regardless,
thank you.
Like you have to work within the lines that Canada has like totally bent you over with, and it's hilarious.
This is still really nice.
But we tried to like do as much as we could.
It rings like what I see in LA, but even better, man. Even more focused and refined.
Well, thank you. That's like, we're like students of the California kind of market. You know, like I fell in love with the branding game over there, and
totally. Like Jungle Boys,
yeah, because it was just so cool.
Their buildings, you know, have like, murals on the side of it. They pay local artists to do it. Like, it's just a good economy. And weed, man. Like, what do you want to do when you smoke weed?
That's right.
Look at art. Like, you want to like vibe out with a song. You want to like watch him. You want to take in art. So like, how did this come to be? Like, did you just find a graphic designer and tell him your thoughts?
No, like the basis of the design was mine. So I do a lot of branding work myself. Yeah.
Of course
so,
you do.
So like the basis of that one was my idea. The color scheme was my idea. And then,
so sexy.
And then I had someone like, I just wasn't completely happy with it. So then I was like, hey, like you want to work with this and see what you can come up with. And so that was the Drip logo came from that one. And then the Flavor Club one was actually very similar to the Drip logo originally. Mm-hmm. And then, I've been working a little bit with, actually quite a bit with, the guys from Ministry of Sativa, VS1, those guys.
They're really good, the weed that we got from them. It like had a wonderful high.
The Ministry of Sativa, the new Durban Diesel is fucking really nice.
Yeah, the DEA.
It's really
yeah,
nice, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was working with them a bit, and then they helped me rework the Flavor Club one. Nice. So yeah,
I love the drip. It's like your name is obviously there, but like before you even see that the drip, you know that it's by you, by the Flavor Club.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, right? We wanted to bring like that, you know. So back to the story of you know what's going to market. That Flavor Club was like, okay, well, let's transition that over to the legal space, and then we tried to do a candy and a gas profile, like so we'd have two SKUs that were, you know, kind of rotated, but they would stay gas or stay candy. And then we only ended up with the one SKU to start with. So I was like, okay, well, let's just drop like the candy or the gas thing off the product name, right? And we'll just call it Flavor Club. And then what we're going to do is rotate every 3 months between, well, try to be, it won't be exact 3 months, depending on, you know, harvest schedule and stuff, but
yeah.
Try to rotate between a gas and a candy profile every few months, right?
So good.
And that way it lets us like kind of keep doing what we like to do, which is just like, you know, chuck pollen around and pheno hunt and find cool shit. It's like a treasure hunt every time.
Chuck pollen around? That's the coolest way to say it. Why you talk so cool, bro? The company name is The Drip. Like you are hip hop too. Fuck. You have such hip hop in you.
I guess. I don't know. I enjoy hip hop.
Did you listen to hip hop?
I listen to hip hop. Yeah, growing up and now, yeah.
The drip, the sauce, the juice, you know, you got the fire like linguistics.
Well, thank you, sir.
And the
I feel old sometimes when I hear the kids talk now. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
My kid says something like, I just pretend like nod like you know, like, yeah. But really, I'm like, I have no clue what you're talking
we
about.
We met some 19-year-olds the other week.
Yeah. When he was
that
pissed.
Didn't know the thong song by Cisco.
Because you know I did the bong song, right?
Yeah,
the remix.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I was like, so it's a remix of the thong song. They're like, the what? And I'm like, y'all don't know what the thong song is. And when he's like, hold on, how old are you guys?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
this is
yeah.
a fucking...
That's... I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, so
you should know that.
There's a. Are you in your 30s?
39.
Nice. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, we're in our 30s too. It's trippy. I think there's a cutoff of the new gen. And I love the new generation, by the way. Really sweet kids, they seem to be, honestly. Like, more sensitive. Like, maybe a little too sensitive sometimes. But
I'm not going to voice my opinion on what's going on. I mean, it's not any fault of theirs.
Well, you have a 13-year-old
daughter. It's not any fault of theirs. Let's say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's what they're exposed to. So
yeah, true. Yeah.
True. But I'm pretty passionate about that, but we're not going to talk about it because it's a pretty heavy conversation, I think.
Oh, word. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's a safe place to have it. But I think what I was going to say is there's a cutoff between, like, the linguistics of like new school and what we'd consider ourselves an old school now, but it's not old school. It's like present school almost.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The line was swag. The line was the invention of the word swag and the usage of it. We got bling bling,
mm-hmm.
right? Then swag happened. And I was a little apprehensive when younger folks started to say swag. I was like, oh no. Like, you know, that's not cool to say, is it? And then they were all like, swag, swag. And I'm like, oh, no. And then gang, gang happened.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh, what?
I still don't really know what that means. I was like, what?
I know. I'm like, what do
like,
you
are
mean?
You talking about your homies? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what, like, is it a cheer?
Is this like a reference for us? Are you saying gang, like, we are of the same gang? And I mean, I just want to say for the record, I'm not gang affiliated. There was a time where it was a risk to say that. So, like, don't say that. Like, don't admit that.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
Dave Chappelle? Gang member. But the drip, I think, existed like just before that. I think for me, I started like to understand and comprehend that. What does that mean to you now in this context for people who may not come from Ebonics or hip hop?
To me now, I mean, from a brand standpoint, it was just like, if I could think of a way to describe like the best weed, it was just like that gooey, like sticky, like
the actual drip of the plant.
Yeah, that was like my like
you're functionally saying because it is like that.
Yeah, it's just like so sticky and gooey, and it's just like it's, you know, like drippy. Like if I was gonna draw like a super like fire like sticky gooey bud, and I was gonna, you know, draw it from an artistic standpoint, like I feel like I would make sure something's dripping off of it.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Because it's just like so like...
It's the smell.
Yeah, like the smell, the flavor, the like...
You're an artist,
texture,
bro.
The,
you're expressing.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I try.
Oh, man. That's so cool. The drip. I love it so much. It feels very hip hop and is presented in a hip hop context, I feel. So I'm behind it 111%.
So is this your is the first one that we can expect the gas or the candy?
That one's gonna be a gas one.
Good call.
It's heavy on the gas side, smokes like heavy OG, like heavy indica effects.
Underserved.
Gas, I think so. I think, you know, the thing with the gas, here's the problem. A lot of the gas, like the true gases, like you look at like all the pinks and stuff like that, they don't test very good. Like they'll slap you, but they don't hit numbers on COAs, right? So that's why you don't see a lot of really good ones in the market.
That's why we got to get they out of stay, that weird THC.
They stay, yeah,
data
they stay on the legacy side a lot because that's where they have value. Like, you know what I mean? Like a really good,
pink
like
Astro or something.
Yeah, like a really good cut, you know, of that, and the legacy is still getting a big price point, you know, per unit, right? Where it just doesn't work. It's not viable on the legal market, right? So there's not a lot of good, like, OG, gassy kind of profiles, right? So
that's weird. So they don't, because usually
not all of them, like some of them test.
Yeah, some
of them,
but like, no, because I'd actually love to hear your perspective on this conversation. The way that terps and THC play different roles in the cannabis, and sometimes it's your body responding to the terps, but in the legal market, there's a lot of THC shopping. I find this conversation to be like underhad, misunderstood a little bit, and like would love to hear your perspective on that, the harmony between terps and THC and testing and shopping for THC and shit like that.
Because we own retail too, right? So we see consumer behavior, and it's just like, it's so often that they come in and it's like, what's your highest THC, you know? And it's just like, literally, like it's just like a pre-programmed question that they're going to ask it everywhere they go, right? So, you know, and I, as a retailer, it's not my job to tell them that that's not what they want, you know? Like, right. I'll inform people that I think are open to having a conversation,
right?
But like, if you come in and that's what you want, like as a retailer, like my job is to provide you with the thing that makes you feel like you got the best value. Right.
Absolutely. So that's such a good, mature, great response.
So it's just it's like, if that's what you want, then I'll make sure that you leave getting the thing that you came, you know. But if they're open to a conversation, obviously you want that, the question of, hey, what's the best flower you have? Like, that's a way nicer question than like, what's your highest THC?
Yeah.
Right. But I just think that the
some people just don't know to ask that way.
I find a lot of it's like more like the older generation of smokers that were kind of like, you know, didn't really get exposed to like having such a selection of like different flavors and profiles and like know what you're smoking all the time. And they, you know, they just want the effect more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like we're like a newer generation of smoker, I think, like is looking for something more than just getting high.
Yeah.
Right? They're looking for a different like sensory experience.
They're
right?
Tuning in more, I think, to like the holistic, almost medicinal purposes of it, I feel. Like the younger folks, even my dad, like just like the headbangers old school. Like, and he's like, it's like Kush. Everything, he's like, it's like Kush. It's like, they're all, everything's crossed.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. What's the retail experience been like for you? Because she started as a GM in a retail.
Okay, cool.
Space.
Yeah. So that was my first, you know, my first like entrance into anything retail related. So it was like a pretty steep learning curve.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Same with the owners of 1922 and when she opened the store with them. Yeah. It's like so much learning. Holy
fuck. It's
and
they were
so tough on you guys with like
and all the regs and stuff like that. Luckily, we had like our partner on our retails. He had a lot of experience in retail, both cannabis and non-cannabis.
Nice.
Kind of was heavily involved in the indigenous market, which is actually kind of where we met.
Cool.
So we had like we didn't do it solo. You know what I mean? Like if we had to do it solo, like it would have been a different experience, I think, because there's so much. Like, if you've never done anything retail ever, like what is a float?
You know what I mean? Like, how would you know?
There's so much you'd have to have someone teach you, right? Like it'd be a mess, right? So
did you guys start with a security guard in the store?
No security guard, but I always wanted to I always seen like pictures in like Cali where there's a guy. AR-15 or something
I've gone in some of those.
I was like, wow, like this shit's serious.
Yeah. I was just high walking around one day and I walked into downtown LA, like it was a parking lot of one of the weed shops, and I didn't make it like 30 seconds walking through that parking lot towards the back of their store before they had like a security guard out there like, what are you doing? Because lots of them still dealing cash. Like it's a weird legacy thing, right?
That's true. That's what it is.
Yeah. So there's like a risk like that. But
so, yeah, no, it's
what's just Lush?
Yeah, Lush Cannabis.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so cool. We got a store in Peterborough, a store in Cabin.
You guys have a store in Peterborough?
Bro, that's why when you told me, when you, but didn't you see me in the comments? Be like, bro, we missed it?
Oh my
like,
God.
Like, what the hell?
I did not yeah, tune into that.
Brought
I should
the whole
you know.
Staff and everybody, man. We would have had a party.
Well.
I was like, God damn it. Because you mentioned it before, but then I didn't get the date exactly.
Yeah,
right? And
yeah.
I was like, hey, make sure you tell me and I'll like bring a bunch of people.
It was
that, you
still
know?
A fun Bless. Night.
You yeah. know, it was a fun night. There was some weird energy, honestly, around it for me. So my head maybe wasn't in the game. So
okay.
We'll have to do another
okay,
yeah. Peterborough
yeah,
we'll
do another
situation.
Peterborough.
And
yeah.
Maybe we'll just have it in the name of Lush.
All right, do it. Let's do it.
Get Lushy. Yeah. It was really cool. I did understand that it's an underserved area. Like in terms of like entertainment like that, like it was,
yeah.
it was, I was happy to be there. Like, you know, it was cool. I feel like people who did make it out, like did appreciate the mm-hmm. unique show.
Yeah.
But yeah, just it's part of the thugging it out stage for us too, having a live event series, which we've evolved a live event to Disciplined Stoners Live because
yeah.
it's so like Zell sponsored that one to help take care of the venue fee and stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I couldn't do this live show series without the cannabis community. I feel sometimes.
Yep.
So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it all.
Yep.
Like, it's like, so we're kind of exclusively going down that route. Cause in our old partnership, there was talks of even like cutting the cannabis, like going another route and going more mainstream. And I'm like, okay, no, I got to go entirely the other direction.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
So, yeah. So fucking, yeah, maybe we will have a weed party.
There you go.
Why not?
Yeah. It was beautiful. We went to the Costco out there after we went for a media day. And I said to Wynn, I'm like, yo, is it weird that I feel so at home and peaceful here? And she's like, no, this is what happens in your 30s. People move to the suburbs because it feels like,
nice.
I don't know, like, yeah, like it just felt so fucking nice. I felt
easy.
Like I could have drove. It was, the sun was setting. I just got some short ribs. I'm like, I could just go park over there and barbecue. Like,
dreamy.
Do you live in Peterborough?
Yeah, we live like just in the cabin right across from our cabin store. Yeah.
Let's go.
So yeah, it worked out like our landlord for the one store, like they had something come up right across the road and we had a house at the time. We're like, yeah, let's just go move there.
That's
so, so yeah. So we live across the road from the store.
And you guys are in
That's
it
great.
Together, you and wifey.
Yeah. And I mean, like that, you know,
that's so sick.
I don't know how people like can do things like that's, you know, like,
honestly,
like can really push to build something or like, you know, commit themselves to something that and keep a healthy relationship. You know, like, and if they're not in it together, because
that's when we were talking at the party, we were chatting, and shout out Adam Brockes, who introduced us. As you started to tell me a bit, like, you know, like just like jumping ship and going in, I'm like, I resonated so hard with your story because like so many parallels between me and Wynn, and sometimes it can be scary, like leaving jobs and leaving stuff and going all nose in. And you know, if you fall on your face, that's your fault. But if you fucking succeed and get that trophy, that's your fault. Like, you know,
that's
so
you
know, I love that. I so admire that too. That endeavor.
I don't know. I feel like if you're gonna like commit yourself to something and like go on a journey, you know, like it's in your best interest to have your significant other on that journey with you, you know, so that way the wins are, you know, together, the losses are together, like,
yes,
you know what I mean. Like Sunday night, it was like 11:30 and we were like getting like stuff ready for our, you know, for our sales team, and it's just like, but we're doing it together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 11:30 on a Sunday night and we're still grinding together, right? Where if it was like, you know, if one of us just worked like a 9-to-5 and the other one's still working at 11:30 on a Sunday and the other one's like, hey, like, are you ever going to spend any time with me? Like, you know, like all you do is like work, you know, like I've been waiting to hang
That's
out for
true.
However long. And just, I don't know, like
that's so fucking,
it makes it
true.
Difficult, right?
It's,
you know, because
it's a wearing,
unless you're doing it like yourself, it's hard to like understand, I don't know, like what it's like to
go all in.
Yeah, you're fully committed, right? There's not like, it doesn't matter what day it is or what time.
Yeah.
None of that matters. It's just like, here's what needs to get done.
Yeah.
It needs to get done now. And it doesn't matter what day or time it is. Like, you just do it.
That's
right?
So amazing.
So for someone that doesn't know that or understand that, like, they'll never get it. They'll never understand, like, why don't you just come over here and hang out with me?
Yeah.
Like, I would love to. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, and obviously, like, in the scenario where, you know, if she didn't, you know, my lovely wife over here, if she didn't leave the bank, you know, like I would have made time, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But we wouldn't have got to where we got to this quickly. You know what I mean? We wouldn't have nowhere.
All hands on deck.
Yeah, like there's, because like literally we 4x the time like efficiency.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Of course.
Like it's either power. Half of my time or both of ours together. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're quadrupling on your output,
seriously,
you know, like by having two together.
Honestly, yes. The way you communicate and how much more time you spend together, it increases your relationship if you're like learn to be respectful with each other.
Which you do when you want it to work.
And who else knows, who's more tuned into the story of like why we're doing this than someone who's like really locked in it with
you? Yeah, 100%. Right. So good. And I appreciate that we have that totally. Part of our relationship, because I think it's what, you know, keeps us like going and everything's always fun. It's always exciting because we're grinding on it, and who knows what's going to happen next.
Do you ever spend too much time together?
We haven't got there yet.
Nice.
No, we haven't got there yet.
I love that.
Yeah, no, that's why we got married, right? It's just like, okay, like this is it.
We've gotten there.
Yeah.
Winnie's better at taking distance than I am.
Well,
I'm a little more joined.
But full transparency, for the first like how long, like 4 or 5 years, we didn't live together, right? So So like it was a long time of not living together before we decided to live together.
I moved right into her place.
Yeah.
I went from mom's to Winnie's place. Yeah.
So I think that probably helps too, right? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like that, like, I don't know.
That's a lot of maturity building right there. Like having, so you had your own places for 4 years while you were in a relationship?
Yeah, like we were in separate, like I was living at home and he had his own place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of quick growth, and then it just like made us have to communicate.
Right? It made you guys communicate more?
Yeah. Well, because we're just trying to like.
Just pointed towards her a little bit.
And then learning to communicate, obviously, is like the best thing for a relationship.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
big fundamental like beginning of our relationship was we were trying to communicate like where we were to like make time, and then when we worked in the same time, we just were doing it together. I don't know. I feel like our relationship started, if not in the most conventional way, but it was what worked for us. And
yeah.
Easy. Like, I don't know. It's just hard to explain to somebody else.
But it is.
It's like easy, and I don't know.
Easy, but like, yeah, everything has challenges. I think that's like in a long-term relationship, like people, we were at this thing called Parks and Sesh.
Yeah.
And I had treated myself to lunch, like a pretty fancy lunch. And then I went to this event and 11 came up to me and he was like, did you treat yourself to what's the place called?
Côte de Bœuf.
Côte de Bœuf lunch?
It's on Ossington and like everything's overpriced, but everything's delicious.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just so good.
It was really good.
And she got her hair done.
Yes, then I got my hair done and it was a day of me. And he was, I was talking to two of my girlfriends and he was so thrilled for me. He was just like so excited that I did that. And then he left, he moved on. And then the women were like, that's fucking magical. Like just like looking at that. And I was like, thank you so much. And I acknowledge that, but it is the amount of work we've done around communication that allows this to 100%. Exist at all.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah.
There are some hard conversations though, for sure, when it comes to like taking space and stuff. Like, do you ever do other things? Like, do you hang out with friends or anything?
I want to say no, because it sounds corny, because like, he is
my best friend.
Like, if I'm going to spend time when we're not working, mm-hmm. I want to do it with him, even though we work together all the time anyways.
Yeah, you guys are truly in love.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, Winnie has two best friends, and I'm not one of them.
I think that you and I spend a lot of time together.
Look. Oh, you miss it. Adam was calling.
Oh, let's go. He felt his ears burning. Yeah, as we talk about
it. That's funny.
So sick.
Okay, this has been really cool.
This has been good.
I think...
You didn't want to say anything about your best friends or anything?
I think that we spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, no, we do. I'm just
talking
with you.
I do prioritize friendships, though. But not over you. We've had this discussion many times.
Sounds like she doesn't want to have it here. I'm just kidding. Anyway, I'm delightfully high. Like,
me too.
Like, bro,
I feel so good.
The cannabis that you create just puts me on such a wonderful vibe. It's like you've infused it with love.
Well, thank you. I would say we probably do. Like, of all the people I know that grow, like, we're in the top percentile of people that, like, genuinely love to do it. So,
do you talk to the plants?
No, I don't.
No.
No, my one friend that, like, is my right-hand guy, he hasn't done it in our spots, but he would play, like, Shire music underneath his plants and just, like, I walk out in the back and check out his garden and his Shire music's playing back there. I'm like, what the fuck is this, bro?
That's cool. Like,
that's the Shire, man.
They're vibrational beings, too.
Yeah, 100% they are.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, that's so good. Fuck. This has been so
How can the people support you? Where should we find you?
Okay, yeah.
Go get that.
Yeah, the drip.city on Instagram. Yeah,
it'll be in the link below as well.
And we'll be on OCS August 8th is our launch date.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, and we never actually got the full lineage of the actual one we're dropping. It is an OG Kush Grape Ape crossed to Skittles.
Oh!
Yeah. So it's a heavy OG leaner, like gassy smoke, indica effect. So yeah, that's the first one.
I cannot wait.
Congratulations.
Congratulations on everything you got going on.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing your attitude and perspective with us today, bro.
Yeah, bro. Appreciate
that
you guys.
So beautiful, man. Guys, yeah. Man. Oh, more good things to come. We'll have to do a drip 2.0 update.
Yeah. We'll circle back through
and we'll get you on.
When we get the $100 million offer, then we'll
celebration.
Yes. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Blessings. Yeah. Subscribe, tell a friend, tell your mom, be kind to your neighbor, send nudes, but only to people who you're allowed to.
Fuck yeah.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Discipline stoners. What's your discipline? You a stoner? That's cool. So are we.
I'm high a lot. It's weird to finally say that with pride. I'm high a lot. Being high has helped me with my anxiety. It's helped my social skills. Well, it's helped me feel okay about my shitty social skills. It doesn't make my social skills better. But it sure does make sitting in that awkward moment in a social interaction a lot more bearable. You know, that moment where no one in the group has anything left to say, and you desperately want to yell at all of them, just say something. Being high makes that hilarious and not torture.
Yo. It's a living from Anger Town.
These
plants just help me chill out. Found focus, found confidence. All of a sudden I was productive. Less protective, more progressive. Yeah, we talk about stuff like I'm a next sommelier. But this is about a medicine, baby. We wish everyone a mindful life. It's been a helpful tool for us. Whatever the route to peace, each individual's journey. And the more we communicate, maybe we can all help each other out. Love and light. Welcome to Discipline Stoners Podcast. With your host, 11.
And my name is Winnie.
And we are the gateway drug to mindfulness. And that's Ralph.
One day we're gonna do a collage of all the times like a brilliant person just said like it's medicine.
Cannabis is a gift from Mother Earth.
Cannabis helped to heal me. Those natural medicines that we use to help to heal us, and of course they have this euphoric effect, or can.
It's an alternate natural way of healing. And I just think it's so beneficial, and there's so many good properties to weed.
I mean, that's the only difference in my life is I've added cannabis. The amount I've changed and the way our family has evolved and our relationships with my adult sons and everything, like just all through cannabis, has been, it's been amazing.
It's part of my life. Like you said, you really can't separate me and the cannabis plant. I use it medically.
Yes.
I have fibromyalgia, diagnosed with fibro very, very young. And I use cannabis to treat my fibro very effectively.
It was through an event that caused her major anxiety that I got her to take a few puffs.
Yeah.
And it helped.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, from being up here to being able to cope.
You know, we've got naturopathic medicine and natural health products that rely on hundreds of years of traditional use.
Yes.
Which, you know, both cannabis and mushrooms technically fall under.
Yes.
If you can keep it at that sweet spot and it's in a healthy way, I feel like that's
it's medicine.
Yeah, I think it's medicine. You have to like check in with your life and be like, medicinal.
I felt like it complemented my personality.
Yeah.
Almost.
Good answer.
It's okay to use cannabis as their medicine. Mm-hmm. They no longer deserve to be in classrooms and hear that they're using drugs and they're bad, when this is medicine that is saving their lives.
Yes.
I mean, I would never put anything on the market that I wouldn't give to my mom or my grandfather.
Those strains are fantastic for pain management, nausea.
This helps, like, with pain management.
And I feel fantastic. Like I feel great. Do so I attribute it to cannabis and cannabis oil? Absolutely, I do.
Relationship to cannabis right now is beautiful, growing, most probably everlasting.
I think this is medicine.
Dude.
120%.
I've got ADD, and I'd use cannabis to help kind of focus me in and kind of turn things off. Like, it very much is medicine.
It was medicinal for me. It was like taking a medicine because that's how it worked.
And I don't know what's happening. We having a threesome in Nova Scotia. 3, 2, 1, and a song. Good night.